that here. But we did want to welcome you. Want to welcome you to week two of a series called The Gift Exchange. We're talking about the gifts that God gives us in exchange for the humility of opening up to Him and trusting Him with our biggest hurts, our habits, our hang-ups, the things that are causing us such grief and pain, and giving them to God, and in return getting so much back. To go as an overview, our last week we gave or watched over giving God your worry, and He'll give you back in return peace. Next week, give God your grief, and He'll give you joy. But this week we're looking at give God your hurts, and God will give you healing. And in all these things, I opened, for instance, with this illustration, but if I were to offer you a $50 bill in exchange for a $1 bill, and I would do that for as many $1 bills as you had, wouldn't you be searching frantically for as many dollar bills in your wallet, in your home, in the sofa, whatever, and be able to make that exchange? What a neat, wonderful opportunity, especially at this time of year. But see, God offers us so much more, so much more. When we give Him our hurts, our pains, our grief, our worries, our concerns, our frustrations, and He gives us back His peace, His comfort, His healing. And what a neat thing that is to pursue. Again, we're looking at giving God our hurts today. Sometimes, I'm sure each of us in here has had one of those days where everything just seems to go wrong. I found this accident report on insurance claims, and these are actual. I did the great thing of going to Snopes, which is, of course, the great arbiter of truth on the internet, but anyway, checked that these were true. These are actual accident report claims that were given. This one here, a lamppost bumped into my car, damaging it in two places. Another one, as I approached the intersection, a stop sign suddenly appeared in a place where no stop sign had ever appeared before. Coming home, I drove into the wrong house and struck a tree that I haven't got. I really don't know who was to blame for the accident because I wasn't looking. I'd been driving for 40 years when I fell asleep at the wheel and had an accident. That is way too long to be driving without going to sleep, you know, 40 years. I left my car unattended for a minute, and whether by accident or design, it ran away. It was no longer to be seen. I was driving my car out of the driveway in the usual manner when it was struck by the other car in the same place it had been struck several times before. Terrible relationship. I was knocked out as a result of the collision and was taken to a hospital where I sustained serious injuries. Not sure what happens in that hospital, but that's where he got those serious injuries. I was on my way to the doctor with rear end trouble when my universal joint gave way, causing me to have an accident. I'm not sure if that's a medical reason, if you can put that on your accident form or not. Leaving home for work, I drove out of my driveway straight into a bus. It wasn't my fault. That bus was there 5 minutes early. And so it's clearly the fault of the driver. My car was legally parked as it backed into the other vehicle. Yeah, not sure how that went. One wheel went into the ditch. My foot jumped from the accelerator pedal, leapt across the lane to the other side, and jammed into the trunk of a tree. That's a very interesting foot that can do that.
Jumped into a tree now.
Yeah, the accident occurred when I was attempting to bring my car out of a skid by steering it into the other vehicle. The accident was caused by me waving to the man that I hit just last week. The car in front hit the pedestrian, but he got up, so I hit him again. The gentleman behind me struck me on the backside. He then went to rest in a bush with just his rear end showing. That's a little TMI right there. The guy was all over the road. I had to swerve a number of times before I hit him. The pedestrian had no idea which direction to run, so I ran over him. Three women were talking to each other, and when one step back and one step forward, I had to have an accident. And lastly, to avoid hitting the bumper of the car in front, I struck the pedestrian instead. But seriously, you've probably had some really bad days in your life. Maybe not as bad as these guys had on their accidents, but you may have had one this week. Maybe it was a really, really bad, tough week. Or maybe you've had one in weeks past, or maybe you're expecting one to come up shortly. But in any case, one thing we know for certain, we will all have really bad days. You know, the Apostle Paul had some pretty bad days as well. One of our two passages this morning will both be from 2 Corinthians, but first is 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 23 to 27. Foundation for this is that false teachers had accused Paul of being a false apostle. And in so doing, Paul was having to respond and rebut their criticisms. And they were saying, you know, that they struggled with things, but Paul never really did. And so he responded this way in verse 23. I have worked harder, been put in prison more often, been whipped times without number, faced death again and again. 5 different times the Jewish leaders gave me 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Once I spent a whole night and a day adrift at sea. I have traveled on many long journeys. I have faced danger from rivers and from robbers. I have faced danger from my own people, the Jews, as well as from Gentiles. I have faced danger in the cities, in the deserts, and in the seas. And I have faced danger from men who claim to be believers but aren't. I have worked hard and long, enduring many sleepless nights. I have been hungry and thirsty and have often gone without food. I have shivered in the cold without enough clothing to keep me warm. Now, these are not accidental happenstances upon him. He went through these voluntarily because he was sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ, and these were the results of doing so. And lastly, he adds one more burden on there, 2 Corinthians 11:28. Then besides all this, I have the daily burden of my concern for all the churches. Remember, Paul was one of the greatest church planters that we know, and planted several churches in the area. He'd been to Spain, he'd been to Rome, and planted a lot of churches, and he had a very strong concern for those churches. So how did Paul get through all that kind of stuff? Well, he wrote about it and all throughout 2 Corinthians, but certainly at the beginning of his second letter to the Corinthians, and that's the passage that I want us to look at today. And we're going to see two main points. Number one, God is the God of all comfort. Now, how can I say that? Because Paul said it. Verse 3, 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3. All praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. God is our merciful Father and the source of all comfort. When it comes to needing encouragement and strength, one area we need to be built up in is when we're suffering, when we're facing these troubles. And as we read this passage, we'll notice that in these 5 verses, Paul says the word comfort 9 times. It's a theme. But this isn't just about any kind of comfort. This is not about comfort in general or worldly sources of comfort. In fact, there's even alcohol called Southern Comfort. But that's not the kind of comfort we're looking at here either. God has a special comfort that he offers us. Now, the original meaning of this word, and we translated comfort, literally means to come alongside and help. In fact, it's a form of the same word we use to describe the Holy Spirit, the comforter, the one that comes to help alongside us. This is the highest kind of comfort there is. This is the comfort that God supplies his suffering people, enjoyed by Paul and his companions, and available to all of God's people who suffer, whether in the city of Corinth at that time or in our community now. Number two, when God, the source of all comfort, gives you his comfort, you can give comfort to others. Verse 4, he goes on, he comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they're troubled, we'll be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. Notice a theme here, it's the word comfort, right? In fact, in some English classes or composition classes, this would be marked with a great big giant redundant in red ink and given back. 4 times the word comfort or form of that word is used in just this one verse. For Paul, though, it's just a matter of emphasis that God is the God of comfort, that provides us comfort when we need him most. Paul says that God comforts us in all of our troubles. In most translations, that's translated as affliction. In the King James, it's tribulation. It literally means pressure or compression or distress. When we're at our hardest points, that's the kind of trouble. It's a general word then for affliction or annoyance or inconveniences, strong inconveniences. People look differently at suffering and persecution. Some Christians attribute suffering to sin. If I suffer, they say, then there must be sin in my life. All I need to do is confess it and ask for forgiveness, and the suffering will end. People will forgive me. My business will prosper. My health will improve, or whatever. Some people will tell us that we're meant to experience the good things in life, comfort and freedom from pain, loving respect in the community, prosperity in all we do, and have health and wealth. Some people hold that suffering and persecution are simply not necessary for the Christian. If I suffer, if I'm the victim of discrimination or persecution as a Christian, they will say that I just not accepted what God has already done for me, and I need to grow up, basically. All I need to do to get right with God, accept his will and do his will, and then the suffering will end, because suffering is not in his will for me, obviously. Others blame God, either for causing suffering or being unable or unwilling to end it. Our passage today does not teach any of these viewpoints, however. Rather, Paul gives us great insight about suffering and comfort, and states the eternal truth that God uses suffering in our lives. Now notice three things in this passage here, this verse here, in verse 4. Number one, in all your troubles, or in every affliction we go through, you may have sinned, and as a result of that sin, now are suffering the consequences. It doesn't matter. God will nonetheless draw you near to comfort you, if you allow him. None of the problems you face are too small for God to care about. None of your problems are too big for him to handle. He's the God of all comfort for all trouble. Notice also, he said that what God does, he comforts us in our afflictions, not from our afflictions. When I think of needing comfort in my pressures or my trials, I often think of removing the pressure. That would be the simplest fix. But this is not the picture given to us here. Rather, God brings us comfort in the midst of our distress and troubles and difficulties. Comfort from God is not the removal of suffering or trials. Rather, it brings us the strength, encouragement, and hope to deal with our difficulties in the midst of those difficulties. And lastly, you may notice that the word comfort, 9 times in 5 verses, is only exceeded in use by the frequency of the words us and we and our. Paul is talking as a man who knows what he's talking about. Now, who would you rather get advice from? Somebody who's lived it or somebody who's read about it and been challenged by it that way? He goes on in verse 5, for the more we suffer for Christ, the more God will shower us with his comfort through Christ. Other translations didn't do this verse justice, I don't believe. In the NIV, it says, we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ. King James, for the sufferings of Christ abound in us. First, there isn't any question that Jesus Christ suffered, obviously. He was persecuted, he was reviled, he was hated, and finally punished by death on the cross. Not only his own body, but his emotions. He was hurt by how people were treating his father. He was deeply disturbed by how people were mistreating each other. He often wept over the sin that was behind all the injustice and the dishonesty and the corruption and the immorality. He suffered, and that suffering led to his death. But the sufferings of Christ did not stop when he died. That suffering continues in the experiences of his people as they do today. Jesus actually said it would be that way. In John 15:20, he said, if they persecute me, they will also persecute you. The sufferings of Christ do not refer to any suffering Messiah endured on the cross. Rather, they refer to the sufferings that Paul underwent in the context of his ministry. That is, suffering for Christ, which in fact every Christian encounters as a result of living in the now. What started with Christ continued in the experiences of his disciples. Everybody suffers, but not everyone suffers for Christ or suffers with him. Paul and every faithful disciple suffers, to some extent, persecution and hardship directly resulting from the suppression of their faith. But as soon as Paul says that, he says something else too. The more God will shower us with the comfort through Christ. In other words, we suffer because of our attachment to him, and we're consoled and comforted by our attachment to him. In fact, Paul says the more trouble we experience, the more comfort is given. No matter the degree of your affliction, this is an important point, no matter how much trouble you are facing, God matches that trouble with just the comfort we need if we'll accept it. Verse 6 continues, even when we're weighed down with troubles, it is for your comfort and salvation. For when we ourselves are comforted, we will certainly comfort you. And then you can patiently endure the same things that we suffer. When you walk through troubles and you trust them to God, receiving his comfort, it's like going to school and learning how to be a comfort to others. How is your suffering a comfort to others? Well, one way is that your example and your sufferings bring comfort and encouragement to those who are also suffering in that same manner. Paul's critics said his sufferings showed that he wasn't an apostle. If he were truly an apostle, then he would not be experiencing so much trouble. But that was not so. Paul turned that argument on themselves and says he has trouble and is comforted by God so that he can comfort all those Corinthians in all their trouble. Verse 7. We are confident that as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in the comfort that God gives us. Paul's troubles in the course of his ministry of preaching the gospel for Jesus Christ result in the salvation of those who heard his message. This, of course, included the Corinthians. So you could say that they owed their salvation, which brought them comfort and the experience of God's presence, they owed that to the suffering of the Apostle Paul. The end result is that everything God did through Paul was both for his benefit and the benefit of the Corinthians. We come to understand the power of God not through the absence of suffering, but actually through the pain of suffering. We do not like this truth. It is not one that we grasp onto gladly and happily, but it is a truth of God nonetheless. We grow in Christ and we grow in faith through our suffering, not by avoiding the suffering. Paul's idea is this: if I must suffer, may I at least help others in their suffering. That attitude is worthy of our imitation here as well. There's a commentary on 2 Corinthians written by Melvin Curry, and he wrote this: all Christians should come to think less and less of their own troubles and more about how these seeming negatives really become positives for them, and especially how they can use these experiences in day-to-day difficulties to strengthen others who must undergo a similar pathway of life. In closing, I bring a story here. The first list was checked on Snopes. I also checked this one, and there was some minor alterations, but this is the story as it truly happened. In 1976, at the Seattle Special Olympics, there were six contestants, all physically or mentally challenged, assembled at the starting line for the 100-yard dash. At the start of the gun, they started out not exactly in a dash, but all with the desire to run the race to finish and win. Everyone, that is, except one boy who stumbled on the asphalt, tumbled over a couple times and began to cry. A couple of the other runners heard the boy cry, and they slowed down, and they looked back, they turned around, and they went back. Then they linked arms and walked across the finish line together. Everyone in the stadium stood, and the cheering went on for several minutes. People who were there still telling story. Why? Because deep down we know this one thing: what matters in this life is more than winning for ourselves. What truly matters in this life is helping others to win, even if it means slowing down and changing our course. There's more to living for Christ than just seeing that we finish the race and make it to heaven. If we fail to stop along the way and help someone who has fallen, like we too have fallen, then we have completely misunderstood what it means to be one of Christ's disciples. When troubles come, whatever its nature or source or perceived cause, we need to stop and do two things. Number one, we need to avail ourselves of the comforts of Jesus Christ. Paul promises them, God promises them, and we need to take advantage of them. But second, we need to lift up our head and look around and say, who else, Lord, is suffering as I am suffering? Who else can I assist? I'll be honest, I've not found this obedience to this passage to be an easy thing. When I'm deep in troubles, to look away from my own troubles and my own discomfort, and in order to take note of others who's for God's sake, is equipping me, runs counter to my fixation for fixing myself, the instinctive fixation of myself. That's why I must be constantly be reminded that God's comfort is more than adequate to meet my needs so that he may meet the needs of others through me. So I hope that the next time I'm hurt or confused or troubled or angered or frustrated or perhaps am put upon unjustly, I'll not ask, why me, Lord? But instead, who else? Who else is suffering as I suffer, that I may comfort them, as you have asked me to? And then from the deep reservoir of strength and comfort that God supplies, I'll be able to share of the life-giving, refreshing waters of divine comfort for which others so, so desperately thirst. Our troubles, all of our anxieties, all the pressures and frustrations, and just hand them to you. And in so doing, you return back instead the gift of healing for those hurts.